that's barely managing to stay upright, with a sway-back porch and a roof that looks like a really old person's mouth without dentures in. A man, a woman, and a little boy are frozen, doing laundry, the old-fashioned way that Roe used to wash her grand mistress robes. She said it kept her humble. There wasn't a humble bone in that porky old witch's body, not even a nice hair anywhere. The man's hands are iced to an antique washboard, and he has some weird kind of metal thing iced on his shoulders, like part of a frame that holds your head still if you broke your neck. The child is frozen, banging a spoon against the bottom of a battered pot. I don't let myself look at the kid long. It slays me when they die. He never even got to have a life. The woman got iced while she was lifting a shirt from a bucket of soapy water. I stand at the edge of the lawn, shivering, absorbing as many details as I can from a distance, getting ready to freeze frame in. If this scene behaves anything like the others, it's going to explode soon. How did you even hear about this one? The pubs, I understand, even the fitness center, because it was in Dublin, and Riordan knows everything that goes on in the city. But these are farmers doing laundry out in the country.
I hear everything.
Yeah, but how?
That was supposed to terminate your line of questioning.
Dude, newsflash. Supposed to never works with me.
Observations.
They knew it was coming, whatever it was. Which makes me feel a whole lot better. I can stop worrying about dying with no warning. Although the boy was looking down at the pot he was holding, the grown-ups' mouths were open, their faces contorted. They saw it and screamed. But why didn't they run? Why didn't she drop the shirt she was washing? It doesn't make sense. Does it freeze them mildly before it totally ices them? Could they have a small reaction, but not be able to fully move? Did it sneak up on the other folks at the other scenes from behind?
I need answers, kid, not questions.
I puff out a breath. It gets foggy, but doesn't ice. It's not as cold as the other scenes.
It's older. It's thawing.
How do you know that?
There's a drop of condensation on the end of the man's nose that's about to fall.
I squint. I don't see no stinking drop. You can't see that far that clearly. I have super eyes and I can't see it.
Jealous, kid.
He lets the last word rise that 100th of a note that he does sometimes when he's humoring me. There's a smile in his voice. It pisses me off more. There is no feckin' way you can see a drop of water from here.
There's another sliding down between the woman's breasts, just above the mole on her left one.
Dude, you can't out-see me by that much.
I can out-everything you.
He gives me a look that I usually see in the mirror. Just like that, I'm in a total snit. Then, I guess you don't need me and I'm wasting my time. I turn around and stomp back to the Humvee. But before I make it 5 steps, he's in my way, looming over me, arms crossed, looking at me weird. Not in the mood, Riordan. Get out of my way.
Being needed is toxic.
It's good to be needed. Means you're important.
It means there's an imbalance of power. There was no shortage of life suckers before the walls fell. You're not responsible for the world just because you're more capable.
Of course I am. That's what more capable folks do.
You could ask me to teach you.
Huh? This night is getting weird in a hurry. Teach me, like you're teaching a class or something. What are you going to call it? You too can be a sociopath 101?
It would be more like a graduate level class.
I start to snicker. His sense of humor sneaks up on you. Then I remember who's talking and bite it off.
You want to be faster, stronger, smarter. Ask me to teach you.
I ain't asking you for nothing. And you might be faster and stronger. For now, no way you're smarter.
Your choice. But turn around because you're not leaving. It's night and you know what that means.
Like it's dark?
You're with me until dawn.
Why dawn? You a vamp or a zombie or something that can't stand the light? He freeze frames away, moves in on the scene.
I like sex for breakfast, kid. I eat early and often.
There I am, thinking normal thoughts about iced people and how much he bugs me. Then he slams me in the eyeballs with sex for breakfast stuff. And just like that, my hormones do that crazy thing they do sometimes, where they start slapping up pictures all over the inside of my head. and each one is more embarrassing than the last. And I can't close my internal eyes, because they don't really exist, and hormones are more stubborn and unpredictable than even me. I wish I'd never watched porn movies, or seen Riot and eating breakfast, because then the pictures wouldn't be so vivid and hard to get rid of. But there he is, in graphic detail, because I know exactly what he looks like naked. I saw him. I know how his body moves. He's got a lot of muscle. Scars, too. I know that when he has sex, he laughs like the world is a perfect place. And when he did that, my hands curled into fists, because I thought about touching his face, like maybe I could catch joy in my hands and hold it. I had all kinds of feckin' strange and stupid thoughts standing there on level 4. I could so kick the shit out of myself for watching. I don't get hormones. I don't understand why the horny little buggers would even notice an old dude like him.
You coming?
I shake myself mentally, pick up and shift sideways. Nothing happens. You've got to be kidding me, I mutter.
Kid, why are you still standing there?
He's freeze-framing around the frozen trio.
It could blow any second.
I don't move, thinking how much I hope it will, so he won't figure out I've lost my superpowers again. I have to, use the, I gesture to the woods behind me. Need a little privacy. Be right back. Just like I hoped, while I'm in the shrubbery, pretending to be, the laundry people blow. The ride back to Dublin is a long and silent one.
13. The very worst part of you is me. I'm on the roof of a building, across the street from the pile of concrete, twisted metal, and broken glass that once was Chester's. The club is deep underground now. Usually there's a line for blocks, but it's 4 in the morning, and everyone who wanted to be inside got inside about an hour ago. I guess that means enough people died to open up additional standing room, because I didn't see anyone come out. A black Humvee pulls up. It's what I've been waiting for. I used to hate being up high, which is ironic, considering I'm a Highlander. Or I was. I'm getting used to heights. The view's better. You see more, and you might as well be invisible. People don't look up much, not even in times like these, when they should, because you never know what's in the sky above you, getting ready to feed on you. Maybe a hunter, or a shade, or me. I watch her get out of the Humvee. She's bouncing from foot to foot between steps, moving sideways and forward at the same time, eating a candy bar. I've never seen anyone with so much energy. Her hair is auburn fire in the moonlight. Her skin is luminous. She has sweet, young curves and long legs. Her features are bone china fine, and expressions rush across her skin like my new unseely tattoos rush beneath mine. But it's the heart of the girl that gets me. He's big and towers over her. Hard face, hard body, hard walk. They look so wrong together. They're talking. She keeps looking up at him like he gets on her last nerve. Good. Her hand hovers near the hilt of her sword, and I know what she's thinking. She despises Chesters. She can barely stand to be in the same place with Faye without killing them. She hates them. All of them. It's a category that will soon include me. The owner of Chesters looks up. I'm deep in shadows on the roof, throwing a light glamour, a new power I've been testing, trying to make my face more palatable to her. I focus on projecting a general blanket of night and emptiness so he can't see me. His gaze stops right where I am, and he gets a smug-ass look on his face, but that's his look most of the time. I've nearly decided that while he might sense a disturbance in the night up here, he can't actually see me. When he inclines his head in that arrogant, imperial way so characteristic of the dickhead, rage washes over me, thick and intense and smothering. And for a few seconds I drift in a black place, where everything's icy and wasted and evil, And I like it. I'm glad I'm going on Sealy, Prince. I say, bring on the power. I say, let there be war. I throw back my head and slide a mane of hair over my shoulders. Cutting it doesn't do a bloody thing. I sleep. I wake up. It's there again. I turn my face up to the moon and inhale greedily. I want to drop to all fours and bay like a wild thing drunk on being hungry and strong. A beast that could fuck for days without cease if I could only find something that could take it as hard and long as I can give it. I want to chime to the moon in Unseelie and hear it chime back. I can smell death in the city, everywhere, and it's intoxicating. I can smell need and sex and hunger, and it's so bloody sweet. Humanity ripe for the plucking and playing and eating. I shift my dick in my jeans. It's painfully hard. And the earth is round. I look back down. My eyes narrow. My boots are crusted with ice. The roof has gone white in a circle of snow and glittering ice in a 15-foot radius around me. I lope lightly along the edge of the roof, crunching snow, following as they go around back. This is going to be so much easier when I don't have to use my feet. He isn't what he's pretending to be with her. I watch him all the time. I'm going to be there when he stops pretending. I'm going to be her bulletproof vest, her shield, her fallen fucking angel, whether she wants one or not. He's pretending he's almost human. He's no more human than me. He's pretending to be nice, like he's safe to be around, like he doesn't have fangs for a reason. He's pretending the term, the gavel effect, wasn't coined about him, meaning you're fine with him, right up until you're not, right up until you're dead. The devil in a businessman's suit. He bides his time, gathers information, processes it, and when he makes a decision, the gavel falls, and everyone that pissed him off or offended him or just breathed wrong dies. She won't be given a stay of execution. No one gets one. The only things that matter to him are others of his kind. She thinks he's not an animal like barons, that he's more civilized. She's right. He is more polished, but it only makes him more dangerous. With barons, you expect to get fucked up royally. With Riordan, you don't see it coming. He's treating her like she's 14 and he's a normal adult, acting like he's taken her under his wing, like he needs her detecting skills, same as barons did to Mac, and she's falling for it, same as Mac. He's lining up his dominoes so they fall more easily when he feels like pushing them over, conserving energy so he doesn't have to hunt her when he's ready to kill her. A bastard like him has one use for women, and she's not old enough. Yet, I can't decide which would be worse, if he killed her before she was old enough, or waited and made her one of his endless string of women. She's not that kind of girl, the endless string type. You get a shot at something like her once in a lifetime, and if you screw it up, there's a special place in hell for you. She breaks away from him suddenly and stomps off ahead. She's pissed. I smile. I pull out my knife, twist my arm over my shoulder and scratch my back with it. Blood trickles. I sigh with relief, but it doesn't last long. Sleeping is a real bitch. My back itches all the time and human drugs don't work on me. I twist to get a better scratch. My blade hits bone with a dull clunk. I saw at it with the serrated tip of the blade, but can't get the angle right. I don't have any friends that are glad to see me. Nobody to lend a helping hand. I tried to get Dad to cut them out of my back. He said they're attached to my spine and it would kill me. I don't believe that. Nothing kills me. The itch. I want them gone almost as much as I'm beginning to want them. Fucking wings. Funny how things work out. Danny killed an Unseelie prince to save Mac, and I end up turning into the replacement for the prince Danny killed. But it's not the lass's fault. It's Max, for needing saving. Later, for forcing me to eat something I would never have eaten if I'd been in my right mind. I wonder if my wings will get as big as Cruz's. I wonder what it would feel like to fly the night sky with him and the other two. I see a vision in my head sometimes of the four of us, swooping down over the city, black wings beating air, filling the sky, owning the world. I can hear the sound we make as the four of us chime deep in our bodies. There's a special, blood-curdling song the Unseelie princes sing. Sometimes it plays in my head while asleep. The call to the wild hunt burns in my blood. I back up to the corner of a small brick building on the roof that houses heat pumps, lean against it, and drag my back from side to side across the edge, scratching, watching as they move toward a metal door in the ground. He catches up with her, and they walk together again. She glides through the night. He punches into it, a boxing glove with razor blades for knuckles. When she passes, the world is a better place. He leaves bloody footprints in a graveyard of bones. He lifts the door. Light blazes up from a hole in the ground, and she descends, my angel, into a sordid hell. He squats at the edge and watches her go, and for a split second, I see an unguarded expression on his face. It chills even a creature as cold as me. I know that look. I've seen it on my own face. Then the son of a bitch looks up at me, and this time, there's no question in my mind that he sees me. He looks straight at me and inclines his head with a mocking smile. I return it coolly. My nod says, yes. Yes, I see you, too. Be very careful. I can't decide if what he just let me see was real, or another of his games. They don't call him the master of manipulation for nothing. Berens breaks heads. Riordan turns them inside out. Berens fucks you up. Riordan makes you fuck yourself up. He pushes buttons and rearranges things according to his own private, coolly sociopathic plan. I liked it better when I thought he was going to kill her. I stop scratching. I want those wings. They'll make the fight that's coming easier. He's a walking dead man. If he wasn't serious about what he just showed me, and he's gaming me, he gamed the wrong Unseelie prince. I'll kill him long before he gets around to killing her. I know how men like him work. I'm becoming one. If he was serious about what he just showed me, he showed it to the wrong Unseelie prince. Because what he showed me is that he sees the same things in her I do. He knows she's worth waiting for. And when it's time, he intends to be the one. That's why he's keeping her close. To those of us who live forever, a few years isn't long to wait. Not for something worth waiting for. Not for a once-in-a-lifetime girl. A few years are a mere blink of an eye to men like us, for whom women crush sweetly like rotting pumpkins after Halloween. Sex isn't easy for me anymore. I'm always holding back. Human women are breakable. Not this one. He sees her like I do. At 17, 20, 30. Superimposed over the 14-year-old, he sees the woman she'll become, and he's staking his claim. Over my dead fucking body. And I can't die. But I know one of his kind that recently did. And I know how. I hear there's a hunter up there in the night sky that likes Unseelie royalty. Soon, I'll have the wings to find him.
My superpowers come back 3 blocks from Chester's. I know, because I've been trying to tap a finger in hyperspeed on my thigh the whole way back. Finally did it. I still haven't managed to make only my eyes move like Raiden, but I've been practicing, and can get certain parts of my body to speed up for short amounts of time. Only problem is, the place where the part connects to my body gets a little sore, like I stressed out the muscles where the slow-mo and fast-mo parts are having a kind of, what the fuck are we doing here, battle with each other. But it's not like I could sit in the Humvee with the dude, who would love to know sometimes I'm helpless, and practice trying to freeze-frame my whole body. If he stopped sudden, I could go shooting straight through the windshield, and then I'd be all cut up for days on top of my usual bruises. I look at him, irritated. Why are you never bruised? What is he? Like the exception to everything? And if so, where do I apply?
Participating in all that bunk,
he says. In other words, I don't get to know because I'm not in whatever his inner circle is. Fine. Don't want to be there anyway. You got some kind of magic salve, dude, because it's only fair to share stuff like that. He pulls up to the curb out front of Chester's. I hop out of the Humvee the second he parks and instantly start bouncing from foot to foot, sideways, in between steps forward, to make sure I'm working right again. No way I'd go inside Chester's with no superpowers. I whip out a candy bar, devour it, then munch three more in quick succession, stockpiling energy. Aren't we done for the night? What else have you got for me to do? I just spent an hour in an electrified sardine can with Riordan, after losing my powers. He saturates confined spaces, like he's got 10 people's stuff crammed into his body. He's pissed at me for not inspecting the scene before it blew. I'm pissed at me too, but it wasn't like I had any choice. Without superpowers, I'm not getting anywhere near one of those scenes. It was a sucky drive. I want some time alone, or time with Dancer. He recharges me. Hanging with him is simple and pretty much perfect. He doesn't answer me, and I look at him. He's staring up at the roof of a building across the street, and he's got an amused, smug look on his face. I search the shadows of the roofline, but I can't figure out what he's checking out. There's nothing up there. Dude, you listening to me? Hello, do you even know I'm here? He continues looking at the roof like he's seeing something I can't see. Like that stupid drop of condensation I'm still not sure I believe was there.
I always know you're there, Danny. I tasted your blood. I feel you all the time.
Okay, that's disturbing. You mean like when I'm around? I clarify for him.
How do you think I found you at your little boyfriend's place?
You need to look at him harder if you think he's little.
I'm so breakable.
Stop talking about him. He's none of your business. Just what are you saying? That you could find me, like, anywhere, anytime? There's a right answer and a wrong answer to that question.
Yes.
That was the wrong answer. I get so mad I'm breathless. Bull. Liar. He laughs and looks at me.
Want to play hide and seek, little girl?
He purrs it in a voice I've never heard him use before, and he actually makes it a question. His fangs are out. Dude, you are one weird... Whatever you are, I'm nearly at a loss for words. He laughs again, and I can't even stand to look at him. So I charge off to the door in the ground that is the new entrance to Chester's. He holds the door up for me. I sigh gustily as I descend the ladder. I hate Riordan. So I'm walking across the dance floor, cutting a beeline straight for the stairs to head up to Riordan's office to do whatever it is he wants me to do, when I see her. She's moving across the main dance floor with Jericho Barons behind her, and it looks like they're heading for one of the subclubs. Though I can't figure out why. Mac doesn't like it here any more than I do. I freeze. I hate seeing her. I hate not knowing what's going on in her life. I hate what I've done. Can't change it, though, so no point in feeling it. Riordan slams into my back, knocking me forward into the crowd. Walk much? I say testily as I careen off of a hulking rhino boy that gnashes yellowed tusks at me. As usual, he doesn't miss a trick. His gaze does that ocular shiver thing all over my face.
I thought you and Mac were friends.
We are friends, I lie.
Then go say hi.
Shit, I hate how much he notices. We might have had a tiny tiff.
Tiny my ass.
Quit nosing into my business.
Learn not to wear it on your face, kid. Except in private, with me, and no one else. You need some serious training. Telegraph like that, it's only a matter of time before somebody hoists you on your own entrails.
Dude, who uses words like entrails? Or hoist?
Tell me what happened.
I fist my hands at my waist. It's none of your business, and that's the beginning and the end of it. Some things you can horn into, some things you can't. Stay the fuck out of it. He looks at me weird.
You said fuck, not feck.
That's all you got from what I just said.
You want privacy on this, I'll give it to you. See how easy that was. If you want something, ask me for it. You'll find I can be a generous man when you treat me right. If you ever figure out what that is.
He moves past me and heads for his office. I can't help myself. I look back at Mac. I grin and kick myself inside for doing it, but there was a time when I loved waking up every day in Dublin, different than I do now, because I knew she was there at Baron's Books and Baubles, and we were going to go do something cool that day. And then she baked me a birthday cake, and picked me out presents, and we watched movies, and we fought back to back, and I had never had anything like that before. And sometimes I feel like a homeless dog out in the rain and thunder, and I'm muddy and cold, and I'm staring in the window at the pretty collie sleeping on a doggy bed close to the fire, and there's a name on the bowl that's next to her, and I wonder what it would be like to... Gah! Get over yourself, wussy girl. I got big dog teeth, and a big dog bite, and I know the rules. You stay inside, you get collared and spayed. I pick myself up and start to freeze frame after rioting, when a commotion in Mac's general direction makes me stop, stay in slow-mo, and glance back. There's a new type of Onseelie in Chester's tonight, and there's something out of a horror flick. They look like anorexic wraiths that might drift around graveyards, breaking open coffins and feeding on rotten corpses. They're draped in black cloaks, with hoods so you can't see their faces, and they don't walk. They hover and glide just above the floor. I glimpse a flash of bone at the sleeves. In their hoods, I catch a quick hint of pale, bloodless skin and something black. There are 20 or so of them in the sub-club Mac and Barons are just entering. They make me think of carrion crow that sense the coming of a storm and perch in treetops everywhere, waiting for the destruction to begin so they can swoop down on the dying and tear flesh from bone with sharp beaks. I'm suddenly certain they don't have normal mouths, and equally certain I'd rather never see what they do have. They turn toward Mac, like they're a single unit or something, which is totally creepy, and begin making a chittering noise that sets every nerve in my body on edge. There are no snakes in Ireland, not because St. Patrick banished them like folks like to tell, but because of the island and climate issues. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by snakes, because I'd never seen one. I took a holiday after Mom died, and Ro freed me, before she started controlling me, too, and went to a bunch of museums and zoos. I saw a rattlesnake. When it moved its tail, it had the same effect on me as these hooded Onseelie when they chitter. The dry, dusty rattle elicited some kind of atavistic response in me, and got me thinking, maybe genetic memory really does exist, and certain sounds just make you want to run like hell. What are they? How come I've never seen them before? What's their unique prey? How do they feed? How can they be killed? Better yet, why are they all peeling away from Mac like she has the Onseelie version of the bubonic plague? There are too many people on the dance floors between us. I can't get a good view. I slide sideways into fast mo, blow past Laura and Fade guarding the stairs at the bottom, making sure I catch Laura a good one with an elbow, and snicker when he grunts, then stop at the top of the stairs and look down. Much better view. The wraiths are chittering even louder, gliding back from Mac and Barron's. But it's Mac all those dark hoods are turned toward.
Interesting,
Riordan says close to my ear.
You have to wonder why they can't get out of her way fast enough. I've never seen them do that before.
Riordan doesn't like Mac. He never has. She got between him and his best boy bud. I'll give him a look. I'll tell you a secret, Riordan. You mess with her, Barons'll kill you. I drag a finger across my neck. Just like that. You aren't all that. Barons'll stomp your ass hands down. He smiles faintly.
I'll be damned. You have a crush on Barons.
I do not have a crush.
You do, too. It's all over your face. Anybody could see it.
Sometimes, boss, you're just wrong.
I'm never wrong. You might as well take out a billboard. Danny O'Malley thinks Jericho Barons is hot. My offer to teach you is still open. Save you from future embarrassment. If I can see it on your face, he can, too.
He never figured it out before. I grumble, then realize I just admitted it. Riordan has a tricky way of wording things that makes you say things you didn't mean to say. Maybe I'll ask Barons to teach me, I mutter, and turn away from the stairs, heading for his office. I run smack into his chest. Dude, move! Trying to get somewhere here.
No one but me is ever going to teach you, Danny.
He touches me before I see it coming, has his hand under my chin, turning my face up. My shiver is instant and uncontrollable.
That's non-negotiable. You've signed a contract with me that grants exclusivity. You won't like it if you try to break it.
I glare at him, wondering what the heck I actually signed. Kind of hoping I never find out. What are we doing here? Pansy talk or work? You got something else for me to do or not? I glance over my shoulder one more time as I push past him. Barons is standing in front of Mac, like a shield, and I allow myself a quick flash of a smile. Riordan is right. I need to learn to hide what I'm feeling. She's safe. She'll always be safe with Barons in the picture. I never have to worry about Mac. Just about what she might do to me one day. I'd rather worry about that than Mac, so essentially, all is right with my world. 14. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. It turns out Riordan didn't have diddly squat for me to do. There were no other iced scenes to visit, so he made me hang around his office with him. I wanted to go back out and examine the debris of the warehouse scene that exploded the other night, pick through it more thoroughly for clues, thinking I could move my hidey holes at the same time. But he told me to study other folks and Faye through the glass floor and see if I thought any of them might be responsible for what was happening. I said, Dude, you said you think it's happening spontaneously, like some part of fairy is bleeding through. Now you want me checking out individuals like they might be doing it? Which one is it? He said both and went back to his paperwork. I don't think he feels the same sense of urgency I do, since it's only been humans getting ice lately, and none of them on his turf. If he doesn't start showing me some investigative action, I'll be forced to work on it on my own time, and I don't know how to squeeze everything in, plus sleep every few days or so. Mac left pretty quick. She seemed to get real nervous about what was happening with the ZEWs, or zoos. That's zombie-eating wraiths for short, because that's what they look like. They had dirt and cobwebs on their cloaks, clues to where they hole up. I relaxed once she was gone. Then I got tense again, having to watch Joe down there in the kiddie sub club, showing off so much leg to the unseely, and there's no question they were liking it. I'd like to have legs like Joe some day, all curvy and smooth-skinned and pretty. No bruises. She kept looking up at Riordan's office with a weird look on her face, all longing-like, like she must have known I was up there. I didn't know she missed me so much. It made me feel bad for not spending more time with her. Sometimes She'd look real hard at the stairs, like she was hoping maybe I'd come down. I watched, sword hand itching all the while, because there were so many things in the club preying on humans that needed killing. By dawn, I was a seething knot of repressed, homicidal she-seer thoughts, and not one bit wiser about who or what was behind the icings. Two good things came from the hours I sat there, till he finally let me leave. I learned about four new types of unsealy, and I composed my next Danny Daily. I plan to clean it up a little visually, make it even more professional-like before printing. Now, sitting up on my favorite water tower perch, I read through my handwritten copy one more time, proofing it before I go to press. The Danny Daily, May 24, 1 AWC. Brought to you exclusively by Danny Mega O'Malley, a.k.a. I give a rat's ass, and unlike imitation newcomers, I always have been your only credible source for the latest news in and around Dublin. Who's been bringing you the facts about what's what ever since the walls fell? Me. Who searched you out and brought food and news to your hidey holes when you were too afraid to leave them? Me. Who carried messages, hunted for missing family members, and brought them home to you if they were alive? Danny Mega O'Malley. Who dug through the rubble for wallets and IDs and gave you back the things so you could grieve? It wasn't some fly-by-night organization that got most of their whole first paper's news out of being snarky about me. That's not news. That's slander. I give you facts you can use. Who's been killing your enemies and teaching you how to fight for the past 7 months? Who rounded up the children and took them to safety? Don't forget what you know is true just because somebody else suddenly pops up, imitating my paper, making crazy, fucked-up claims. I haven't seen any power or water running yet that isn't generator-powered. And folks, I can hook that up for you. I care. Always will, Dublin. Danny out. I don't do rebuttals, and I ain't got no love letters in me, so this'll have to do. Once I print and post it, I'm going to hole up and sleep like the dead for 10 hours. Been up 2 or 3 days now. I always forget until I'm about to keel over. I've been sitting on my water tower, looking down over the city, watching the sun come up. The air is clean like it never was before the walls fell. It's foggy, but not smoggy like it used to be. I love living in a harbor town. Once, when I was 9, I stowed away on a fishing boat. They couldn't get rid of me until the end of the day because they needed the full day's catch. They finally ended up letting me ride up front, wind in my hair, salt spray in my face. The docks have always fascinated me, with big ships coming and going places, tales of adventure and excitement stuck to their hulls like barnacles. Now they just sit, dead in the water like so much else. I've got a cool hidey hole on one of them. I decide I ain't been there in a while, and I'll catch some Z's there later. The sky is platinum, the sea slate, and the River Liffey is sliding down through the city, metallic. Fog spills silver lace over it all. Takes my fucking breath away. I could admire it for hours, but I got a job to do. People got short memories. They get fear-blind and easily dazzled, especially during times of war when the world starts looking so dark and gritty that shiny things start looking shinier. I gotta keep reminding them of the things they know are true. Me and Dublin, we're peas in the megapod. This is my city and my paper, and I don't give up nothing that's mine without a fight. I've never lost a fight yet. Well, only to that fecker Riordan, and there's no way he's behind We Care. He's like the antithesis of We Care. He's like, we don't fucking care, all wrapped up with we'll eat you for lunch, too. There goes my mood again. That's all it takes. One little thought about him. I have to go to work again tonight, like some feckin' slow-mo Joe, trudging along with the masses. And the unfairness of it all is now that the world has melted down, nobody has to go to work anymore. Except me. I bristle, realizing I can't go sleep like the dead once I get my rag up, because I have to set an alarm. Me! I have to get up at a certain time. I've never paid any attention to time. Dancer says I've enjoyed a luxury most people never have. He hates clocks and watches and everything that has to do with time. He says people already have too many lost days, and that most folks live in the past or the future, but never the present. Always saying stuff like, I'm unhappy because X happened to me yesterday, or I'll be happy again when Y happens to me tomorrow. He says time is the ultimate villain. I don't really get that, but that's probably because until this very friggin' moment, I never had to look at a clock for anything. I woke up when I felt like it. I went to sleep when I felt like it. If I'm lucky, I'll be able to squeeze in 5 whole hours of sleep before I have to go back to work. I'm aghast at the horrificness of it all. Clock hands are ticking away my life at someone else's direction. It's so wrong. I wake up slow and careful. Don't even stretch. I lay still, feeling the boat rock gentle on the waves. I love sleeping on my ship. Got it booby-trapped to the nines. I got caught by one of them today. They're so good. I don't open my eyes because it takes me a while to get moving. Sometimes it can take me a half hour. That's why I set my alarm for 7 instead of 7:30. My alarm. Was that what just woke me? I don't remember turning it off. I fumble for my cell phone. Signal might be dead, but it still plays music and games, and has a stupid alarm clock. I encounter an obstacle between me and my phone that feels like... I make a sound I didn't know I could make. Part gasp, part shriek, and shoot straight up in bed, eyes flying open. What just came out of my mouth is so girly it makes me cringe, so I grab my sword and swing it. He knocks it out of my hand and it clatters across the floor. I can't even say anything for a sec. I mean sec. This is like my worst nightmare ever in the whole world. This is worse than all the zoos coming after me, plus the devil and all the unseelie princes, too. Riordan is in bed next to me. Sitting there, cool as you please. We're in bed together. He's given me that faint smile and mocking stare. Guess he was watching me sleep. Did I snore? Was I flopped flat on my back with my mouth hanging open? I have no idea how long he's been here. How'd he get in? How the heck did he get past all my booby traps? Obviously, I'm going to have to come up with some new ones. I try to push him off the bed. It's like trying to budge a mountain. I hit him, like a girl, not even using my superpowers. Assuming I have them at the moment, the fickle feckin' things. What good is it to be a superhero if you only are some of the time and you never get to know when? He catches my fist and holds it. I can't get my fist out of his hand. Dude, give me some space here. I need room when I wake up. I can't breathe. Move! He laughs, and I want to crawl under the covers and burrow deep and hide, and pretend this is just a really bad nightmare, and it'll be over soon. Get off my bed! When he lets me go and stands, the mattress rises 4 inches on his side. I can't believe I didn't feel him sit down. Yes, I can. I sleep hard.
You're late for work, kid.
What time is it? I glance wildly around for my cell phone. I'm so sleep discombobulated, I can barely function. I spot it on the end table next to the bed. It's smashed into a gazillion pieces. You broke my cell phone!
It was smashed when I got here. You must have done it when the alarm went off.
It's not like it's my fault, I say crossly, shoving my hair out of my face with both hands. I never had to use an alarm before.
Am I giving you shit?
You're like, here.
That's because you're late for work, kid. Get dressed.
Clothes hit me in the chest. I realize I have on my favorite PJs. They're flannel and have ducks on them. Maybe he didn't notice. Can't stand it. This is my place. It's supposed to be private.
Captain's quarters. Pretty plush. Get moving. We've got things to do.
He walks to the door and heads for the deck.
Nice PJs, kid.
He takes me to a church. Churches crack me up. They're like money, a conspiracy of faith. Like everyone agreed to believe that not only is there a God, but he comes down and checks on folks, so long as they hang in certain places, put up altars, burn lots of candles and incense, and perform sit, stand, kneel, and other wacky rituals that'd make a coven of witches look not OCD. Then, to further complicate it, some folks perform rituals subset A, and other folks perform rituals subset B, C, or D, and so on into an infinity of denominations, and call themselves different things, then deny everyone else's right to heaven if they're not performing the same rituals. Dude, weird. I figure, if there is a God, he or she isn't paying attention to what we build, or if we follow some elaborate rules, but cupping a ride on our shoulders, watching what we do every day, seeing if we took this great big adventure called life and did anything interesting with it. I figure, the folks that are the most interesting get to go to heaven. I mean, if I was God, that's who I'd want there with me. I also figure being eternally happy would be eternally boring, so I try not to be too interesting, even though it's hard for me. I'd rather be a superhero in hell, kicking all kinds of demon ass, than an angel in heaven, wafting around with a beatific smile on my face, playing a pansy harp all day. Dude, give me drums and big cymbals. I like the crash and bang. So, Riordan takes me to a church, and I stand outside looking in, stymied. I mentally review the places I've seen so far that got iced. Chester's Sub Club, a warehouse on the outskirts of town, two small underground pubs, a fitness center, the rural laundromat family, and now a small congregation in a church. I linger at the tall double-door entrance, absorbing details because I'm in no hurry to rush in. The cold emanating from the interior is brutal, worse than any scene yet. My breath burns all the way down into my lungs, even with a good 50 yards between me and the front of the church, where the folks are gathered at the altar in a frosty nativity scene. There are 8 men, 3 women, a priest, a dog standing there, and an old man sitting at the organ. I hear more men than women survived Halloween, and in a lot of rural places, women have become a wicked hot commodity, with men tripping all over themselves to score one. The pipes of the organ behind the altar are covered with icicles, and the ceiling drips enormous stalactites. There's a frozen fog hanging around the entire interior. The priest is standing behind the altar, facing the others, his arms raised, like he was in the middle of a sermon. It's colder than any of the rest, which suggests it happened more recently, ambient temperature and all factored in, I say, and when I talk, my breath crystallizes in little clouds that hang in the air. I jerk with a sudden, uncontrollable shiver. Fuck, it's cold.
Too cold for you.
I look at him. There was nearly a question mark at the end of that one. Dude, you worried about me? I'm indestructible. When did you find out about this one?
Fade found it about 40 minutes ago. He'd passed the church 10 minutes earlier and it wasn't iced. On his way back, it was.
So it is the freshest one we've seen so far. I notice he's not pressing into the church in slow-mo like he has at prior scenes. Guess it's a little cold even for him. I breathe in and out, fast and hard, bellowing my lungs, priming my adrenaline pump. Let's do it. I mentally pick myself up, shift gears, and freeze frame in. There's cold, and then there's something worse. This cold knifes into me and twists, catching gristle and bone. It slices down through muscle and tendon, razoring my nerves. But this scene is the freshest of them all. And if there's any place I'm going to find clues, it's here, before the temperature starts to rise and things change. If things do. I just don't know enough. I circle the small gathering, shivering. I've stuttered with cold at other scenes, but never shivered while freeze-framing. I think shivering is cool, because it's the body's way of freeze-framing on a molecular level. Your cells sense the temperature is too cold for you, and your brain makes you vibrate minutely all over to generate heat. So I'm like, freeze frame and twice right now, on a cellular level and on my feet. The body is a brilliant thing. I look at their faces first. They're frozen with their mouths open, faces contorted, screaming, same as the outdoor laundromat people. These folks saw it coming too. All except for the priest, who's looking startled at the folks standing there, which tells me whatever it was, it came from behind the priest, and it came fast, because his head isn't even turning. He must have been reacting to the looks on their faces. It must have appeared and iced simultaneously, or he'd have had time to begin to look behind him. I feel a little better about whatever's happening, because twice now people saw it coming. That means I have a chance of getting out of its way if it comes in my direction.
Save your observations and breath,
Riordan says at my ear.
Gather info and get out.
I look at him because of how he just spoke. Soon as I do, I understand why he kept stopping and starting. His face is iced solid. It cracks when he adds,
hurry the fuck up.
My face isn't iced. Why is his? I reach out without thinking, like I'm going to touch him or something, and he knocks my hand away.
Don't fucking touch anything. Not even me.
Ice shatters and reforms on his face four times before he completes the sentence. Embarrassed, I whiz away, snap my mind up tight, and focus on the details. I have no clue why I almost touched him. There's no explanation for my behavior. I think he put some kind of spell on me with his application. What's happening at these iced places? Why is it happening? Is some inhumanly cold part of Faerie really bleeding through? I understand why Riordan thinks it is. At each scene, nothing appears to have been taken. I see no common denominators. Nothing was eaten. No one was harmed. Then why did it happen? I consider each of these iced scenes a crime. People are dead. Crimes require motive. I whiz back and forth, trying to discern some inkling of a motive, a hint of a sentient mind behind this. Looking close, for tiny injuries, say from something like needle-thin teeth. Are they drained of bodily fluids certain sick fae consider tasty? The thought makes me think of a few fae I should have killed. If I had, everything would be fine between me and Mac. She'd never have known. Still don't know why I didn't. Wasn't like I wanted to get caught. I see no signs of harm or foul play of any kind. Then I see her, and it's an instant heart punch. Oh, bugger, I say. I don't mind so much when adults get killed because I know they had a life. They lived. They had their chance. And hopefully they died fighting. But kids? Well, kids just slay me. They didn't even get to know what a crazy, wonderful, amazing place the world is. They didn't even get to have hardly any adventures. This one didn't get any adventures at all. She never even got past the, gee, I'm glad I got milk stage. One of the women is holding a baby girl with a halo of curly red hair, just like mine, nestled in the crook of her arm. She has a tiny fist wrapped around her mom's finger and is frozen, staring up at her mom like she's the most beautiful, magical angel in the world, which is exactly how I felt about mine before everything got so... yeah, well, so... And something nuts happens to me that I don't understand. But I'm going to start doing what the rest of the world does, and blame everything on my hormones, because I used to be the coolest of the cool, until I started having periods. I get all mushy inside, like some kind of wimp that buys into those greeting card commercials. And I think about Mom, and even though she did things to me that other people would think were awful, I understand why she kept me in a cage. There weren't many choices, and she didn't have much money. And she wasn't always mean to me. She did it to keep me safe. I never blamed her for keeping me in a cage with a collar. I just wished she'd stop forgetting me, like she didn't want to remember me. Or maybe she wished she'd never had me. But But it wasn't always like that with us. I remember feeling crazy loved. I remember when it was different. I just never could get it back. And all of the sudden, there's like this stupid feckin' thing so cold at the corner of my eyes on the insides, like I tried to cry or something. And I don't feckin' cry. And it froze the second it started, and my head hurts. And I reach out and I touch the tiny fist wrapped around her mommy's finger, and my heart squinches. And then I have this horrible pressure in my ears, and then something inside me gives with a soft squishing sound. And all of a sudden, I can't breathe, and I'm so cold I guess it must be like getting dumped naked in space. The cold knifes into me, flays me, slays me, glacierizes me. Cold takes on new meanings, and just about when I think I understand it, like it's some complex state of being that I could exist inside of, it flips all around on me, and I burn everywhere, and I'm hot, and I'm hot. And I'm so feckin' unbelievably hot that I start tearing off my clothes, and I can't do it fast enough, because I feel thick and slow and stupid, and I realize somehow I've dropped back down into slow-mo. Was it when I touched her? Was that why he told me not to touch anything? Does touching something so cold knock you down from fast-mo? How does he know that if it's true? Did it knock him down once somewhere? Is that how he knew? Then why didn't it kill him? It's too cold down in slow-mo, seriously like outer space. I try to freeze frame back up. I stumble to my knees. I must have waited too long. Maybe the instant I dropped down was too long. God, the floor is cold. It hurts. It hurts. Oh, it hurts. I just thought, God, I don't use that word. Do I believe? Have I found faith here? On my knees, now, at the end. That seems kind of hypocritical-like to me. Ain't Diane a hypocrite? I start to snicker. I'm not shivering. I'm hot. I'm so hot. Even now, I try to absorb more details. Curiosity. Cat, Diane. May as well. It's a vacuum here. Something's wrong. Something's missing that I couldn't feel missing in Fastmo, but I don't understand what. The stuff around me, the people and everything feel somehow flat, void of an essential ingredient that would give it multidimensionality. Rye? I can't get his name out. I hear him yelling, but I can't understand the words, and it sounds weird, like he's talking muffled into a pillow. I try to skinny off my jeans. I need them off. They're cold. So cold. Have to get everything off. It's so cold it's burning my skin. He's fighting me, trying to keep them on me. Get out of my way, I try to say, but nothing comes out. I need them off. If I can get them off, I might be okay. And all I can think is, help me! I scream inside my head. My heart is going. It summons up the energy for one last violent feck you pump, but only manages a soft squish. I can't die like this. I have things to do. My adventure has hardly begun. Everything goes black. I see death. Ain't so fascinating. It's a sledgehammer. Oh, shit. I know what rigor mortis is. I know my face is going to stick. I'm choosing how. I belly up a laugh from way down deep, where I'm always half laughing anyway, because being alive, dude, it's the greatest adventure in the world. What a ride it's been. Short, but stupendous. Ain't nobody can say Danny Mega O'Malley didn't live while she was here. No regrets. Danny out.
15. Hot child in the city. I lose track of them for 1 minute, distracted by a female unseelie down in the streets that has what the Highlander in me considers revolting parts, but the print